you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk. Good morning. I'm Larry Mantle. We come your way an hour early again so we can bring you today's live NPR coverage of the Senate impeachment trial. It's the second day of presentation by President Trump's defense team. The trial resumes at 10. This hour, we remember Kobe Bryant and the others aboard the helicopter that crashed less than 24 hours ago in Calabasas. Large groups of fans gathered to grieve at Staples Center and near the crash site. We'll hear from Air Talk listeners and other special guests that knew Kobe Bryant well. That all comes up right after the news. This morning, it's Air Talk on KPCC, followed by NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump, that coming up at 10.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us for our early 9 o'clock start. You're listening to the music from John Williams that he specially composed for the 2017 Oscar-winning animated short, Dear Basketball, which animated a letter that Kobe wrote to the sport of basketball upon his retirement. Glenn Keane, the great animator, directed the film. That letter was published in the Players Tribune in November of 2015, in which he announced his retirement. Let's listen to this excerpt from that Oscar-winning animated short.
As a six-year-old boy, deeply in love with you, I never saw the end of the tunnel. I only saw myself running out of one. And so I ran. I ran up and down every court after every loose ball for you. You asked for my hustle. I gave you my heart. Because it came with so much more. I played through the sweat and the hurt. Not because challenge called me, but because you called me. I did everything for you. Because that's what you do when someone makes you feel as alive as you've made me feel. You gave a six-year-old boy his Laker dream, and I'll always love you for it.
Kobe Bryant reading from that letter he wrote as he approached retirement, the Oscar-winning film Dear Basketball. Joining us now is part owner of the Los Angeles Lakers and the owner and executive chairman of the Los Angeles Times as well, Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong. Dr. Soon-Shiong, thank you very much for joining us this morning on Air Talk. And we begin with our condolences because we know it wasn't just a professional relationship you had with Kobe Bryant, but that he was a good friend to you as well.
Thank you, Larry. You know, I think it's I wake up this morning and try and think, was this true? Is this a nightmare? And I just, it's indescribable, the thinking of how the pain that Vanessa and the family must be going through. And I just want to start by saying we shall send our prayers and the love that the city and that even the country has now bestowed is evident of this man. And as we learn more of the other victims that were on the helicopter I think we should send our prayers to all, and I want to should start by sharing that with them all.
Yes, we just heard from Suzanne Watley's update the names of those that died in yesterday's crash. Just incomprehensible. The loss to each of those families, to the girls' basketball team that's been so heavily affected by this. And, of course, we saw the outpouring of grief from Angelenos, who turned out at Staples Center, thousands of them, as the crowd grew throughout the afternoon and evening, and near the crash site in Calabasas as well. You were out in public with Kobe at times, and give us a sense of what that was like and how he related to Angelenos.
Well, Kobe, I saw very, very early on, and as we established our relationship many, many years ago, and as it when I became owner, was really the epitome of a global citizen, and his intellect, his drive, his desire to strive for excellence in whatever he does was fascinating. And when he sought me out, he and Rob Pelinka came, and Rob was at that point still his agent, and came to visit with me so we could make an acquaintance. It was instantaneous for both of us that we become long friends. And he sought me out as a mentor because his curiosity went beyond everything, including the work we were doing on cancer and the work we were doing on machine vision and artificial intelligence. And he wanted to learn, and his drive and burning to learn. And it's so sad because he's gone, accomplished everything he said, and it's gone to what I think the second phase of his life, which was to teach and to educate and to inspire. I literally just saw him 3 weeks ago at the Dallas game with Gigi. Wife and I gave him a hug, and we were planning dinner, and Michelle was just congratulating him on how beautiful he's brought the children and the family together, and how wonderful Gigi is going to be in his footsteps. And what struck me was that the first time after many, many, many years, I saw a peace in him, not a peace of quiet, but a peace of accomplishment. And now he knew exactly what his next step would be. And I saw a young man that had an opportunity to really heal the nation, actually heal maybe even the world by his abilities. So it's amazing, incredible loss to humanity.
We're talking with Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong, who's part owner of the Lakers, also the owner and executive chairman of the Los Angeles Times and its sister publications. Dr. Soon-Shiong, a good friend of Kobe Bryant's. He was central in Kobe's recovery from what could have been a career-ending rupture of his Achilles tendon, where Kobe extraordinarily, after suffering an injury of that's that painful, of that magnitude, shot two free throws and then left the court afterwards. That drive, that intensity of Kobe Bryant seemed to have been there since his arrival as a teenager to the Lakers. But he did seem to have softened a bit post-retirement, Dr. Soon-Shiong, and he seemed a little bit more relaxed in himself, at least outwardly. Was that your perception of him?
Well, when I met with Kobe over the many years, even before, clearly before his Achilles injury, it was really on a one-on-one basis where with him. And the beauty about Kobe, he had no entourage. It was either he and myself or he and Rob Pelinka together. And we had hours and hours and hours of conversations. And that's when you saw the real Kobe. You know, when Kobe is out playing as a Laker, his game face, his mentality, his sense of focus, which is his strength, is what the public saw. I watched last night one of his statements about he didn't celebrate an opportunity to play. He celebrated the opportunity to win. And I think what people didn't see is what we had the privilege of seeing. He was fun, funny, curious, intellectually incredibly curious, loved his children, loved his family, loved Vanessa, and always wanted to grow. And the fact that he sought me out for mentorship was such a privilege. He reached out because he said he wanted to understand how I thought, and I wanted to understand how he thought, because it was very clear. I said to him that if I ever came back one day, if God gave me another opportunity, I'd love to be a basketball player like he was. And he wanted to just understand what drove excellence and how the work that we were doing on artificial intelligence and cancer, how we could learn from that. And that was him. And I don't think the public saw that face of him.
Mm-hmm. Have you, in the past 24 hours, had any contact with Kobe's family?
No, I've reached out clearly to make sure that in times like this, I think one of the most important things is to give the family respect and privacy. This pain and this grief is so indescribable. There's very little one could say or even do during these times. And so clearly the Laker organization and Jeannie and Linda and Rob are all around the family in Orange County. And I think this is where we should really respect a little bit this privacy moment for Vanessa and the family.
I assume you're going to be there for tomorrow night's game at Staples, the Lakers hosting the Clippers. That's going to be an intense game.
Oh, it's going to be more than intense. It's going to be so painful. You know, as I said, I used to go and had to be as almost a pact with Kobe at every game before the game started. I would go into the locker room with him, and he'd be chatting. We'd be chatting. There'd be some of our downtime together, and then he would turn his game face on and get focused. He would go to sit on the bench. The curtain would come down. He would walk up to get announced, and then we would do the ritual hug. He wanted the hug, and we both felt that. He felt that, frankly, that brought him luck. I'm not sure it brought us. We didn't win the championship, unfortunately, but it was a wonderful ritual. And the next time I saw him, because this year has been so busy, I wasn't able to get to many games. The game I got to was the Dallas Maverick game, and there he was with Gigi, and I knew he was going to be there. I went over to him in a quiet moment, and oh my God, it was so wonderful to see him so happy. And that is really what touched me, the fact that he was really happy. So this is going to be a very painful moment in time now, you know, sitting in that seat, because we would make a lot of eye contact even before and during the game when he sat down on the bench. There were little quiet little signals, and sitting there now would be, for now and the rest of time, the memories of all those wonderful moments.
We're talking with Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong, part owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, and long before he became an owner of the Lakers, a good friend, Kobe Bryant, who died yesterday at the age of 41, as well as the other individuals, all with a significant place here in Southern California, family members, leaders, another, the coach of Orange Coast College's baseball team, John Altobelli, his wife and daughter as well, Carrie and Alyssa, and the others who were killed in that crash, Christina Mauser, top assistant coach of the Mamba girls basketball team, and a high school coach as well. Incalculable loss to all the families that were involved. It's Air Talk on KPCC. We'll continue with Dr. Soon Chong, and I'd like to hear from you, your memories of Kobe Bryant, his significance in your life. 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Back in 1 minute.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.
Again, this is music from John Williams' score to Dear Basketball, the Oscar-winning 2017 animated short from animator Glenn Keane, based around Kobe Bryant's letter he had published in the Players' Tribune, in which he announced his retirement and detailed his relationship to the sport of basketball. I'd love to hear from you at 866-893-KPECC. We'll continue with Dr. Patrick Soon-Chong in a moment, but Mike in Anaheim, want to get a listener call in. Mike, you had an experience with Kobe?
Yes, he would frequent I work at Disneyland, and he would always use like the backstage areas to go on an attraction or eat at a restaurant. But every time he would walk back there, any cast member nearby would kind of stop and recognize, even chant Kobe at times. And to Kobe, was kind of like seeing an old friend.
Yeah, Mike. It's got to be so, so hard for anyone who had that kind of personal interaction, was around his magnetic personality and the warmth, which, you know, often his playing was so intense. We didn't get any sense of that. But Dr. Soon-Chong, what Mike's talking about there, the graciousness of Kobe and his dealings with the public, the flip side of that intense go for broke as a competitor.
Well, that's what I said. He had this really what was his amazing strength, his mental capacity and his ability to play through pain. And he really goes all out. And from his perspective, not only should he go all out, but he's team players would go all out, and everybody from Pau Gasol to Mehta to Derek Fisher, who he was all so close to, and I've been communicating with them all weekend, and the pain that everybody's feeling.
Dr. Soon-Chong, we have a listener, Dove, who wrote on our Facebook page, "I've been reading a book called Relentless. It uses Kobe as an example of someone with a relentless work ethic. Honestly, it doesn't matter who you are, what you think is important in life. Every single person can learn from Kobe and how hard he worked to be the greatest at what he loved." Did you and Kobe actually talk about his drive, about, you know, when he felt this about himself? Did was he self-reflective at all in that way?
Very much. I mean, look, I think the work ethic was not only self-evident, but was part of his self-belief in himself, that he was not only different, was going to make a difference, and clearly he did, not just for the game of basketball, but beyond. So not only did he work, I saw him play through pain when he had that injured finger, injured shoulder, and then ruptured Achilles. And then during his recovery, his work ethic during that recovery was, almost superhuman. And then when he came back, the continued work ethic, how he sort of took care of his body, how he took care of his nutrition. And then when he wanted to go into a different field, the work ethic around that, understanding, he wanted to understand, for example, you know, we were building an app that allowed the mobile phone to recognize a cancer cell through a thing called machine vision. He would spend hours and hours with me trying to understand that. And actually, as I'm talking to you now, just thinking of the app we built to show him where we took one of his Nike shoes and had a Kobe playing on the shoe, shooting a basketball. And this was his fascination with creativity. He is an amazing creative person. He was an amazing writer. He would write constantly his thoughts. And all these wonderful memories, and you know, clearly the fact that he could go from a basketball player and immediately become an Oscar-winning writer of a short story, animated short story, really is testament to this man's capabilities.
I was talking about you know, how fans perceived him off the court versus his demeanor on the court. And you know, he had some fractious relationships with his teammates, you know, most notably Shaquille O'Neal, but others. There were those who felt that he was selfish and that he was so self-concerned that he was a difficult teammate. Did Kobe ever talk with you about that perception that some of his teammates shared privately and others publicly?
Look, I think it may have been perceived by others as selfish. I think his perception was that everybody should work as hard as he was working. And clearly, at times, and many times, he carried the team. But I think the people who really understood him, you know, people like Pau Gasol and people like Meta World Peace and Derek Fisher, really got where he was going. Shaq is a wonderful, kind human being. And I think the public overly makes much of the fact that they were at odds with each other. And I think you see not only from Shaq's response to this tragedy. I've sat down with Shaq many times, and it was really very, very professional of wanting to win. And I think that's what really drove him.
Do you think that the relationship at the point it was broken and Shaq was traded to Miami, was there anything you think that could have salvaged that they could have continued to have played together?
Well, I wasn't obviously involved with the team as an owner at that point in time, but merely as a fan. And yes, I clearly felt it was a shame. But on the other hand, it also gave both of them, you know, an opportunity to shine in their own light. Who would have been, you know, I think in today's basketball, as you see today with the duos going on around the league, especially now with LeBron and Anthony Davis on our side and Kawhi and George on the Clippers side, etc. That duet is now considered a path. And yeah, I believe Shaq and Kobe had stayed together, we would have many more championships. But it allowed Kobe to prove that he could win championships on his own, and he did, and allowed Shaq to do what he's done. And I think they've both grown, and both are amazing human beings, allowing really to spread the basketball as a sport that could bring people together.
Dr. Soon Shiong, I know you need to go. Thank you for being with us. Just very briefly, can you describe how he affected you as a person? Are there ways in which you changed as a result of your friendship with Kobe?
Well, what he taught me was how you could use celebrity for good. And, you know, clearly when he went to China, I mean, the country almost shut down. Cities would shut down. And he would travel with Judy Sito. He also taught me about how, as a young man, determination and persistence. But most importantly, he taught me about, again, the use of celebrity to inspire young people and children. And, you know, what he did with Gigi and what he was about to do. And that's what breaks my heart, because I know what he was about to do, and I would have been there in any way, shape, or form as he inspired young children in our community and brought people together. So that's what changed me as I got to see that it's not the importance of celebrity, but it's how you use it. And everybody should use Kobe as a role model of using celebrity for good.
Dr. Soon Shiong, thank you for being with us. And again, our deepest sympathies to you and to your family over the loss of Kobe Bryant, your close friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Patrick Soon Shiong, part owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, but a huge Laker fan long before he bought an interest in the team, executive chairman and owner of the Los Angeles Times and its sister publications as well. This hour on Air Talk, we're looking back at the life and impact of Kobe Bryant on Southern California. Now a chance to hear from you. Your favorite memory of Kobe, his influence on you, 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Let's talk with Amjad in Covina. Thank you, sir, for your patience on the line. Your favorite Kobe memory.
Thank you, Larry. What an unspeakable tragedy. Kobe was 6 months older than me, and I never spoke to him or met him. But I started college around the same time he started the NBA. And this 20-year career that he had, I've seen that in my own arc of my own life. And one memory that stands out is in 2010, I happened to be at the Raptors game, not the 81-point game, but another game in which Lakers were down one. I was with my wife. We happened to land seats a few rows from the floor somehow, some way. And we were giddy to see Kobe Bryant for the first time up close. And I yelled out, Kobe, you got this. And he turned around, nodded his head and said, I got this. The whistle blew. He took a 20-footer, buried it at the buzzer. Lakers won. He turned back to us and he winked.
Wow.
And it was such an incredible moment because, of course, we were Laker fans. We had seen basically every one of his games. But to see that level of confidence and skill up close was just mind-boggling.
If you saw that in the movie, Amjad, you'd probably say, okay, that's really stretching, our suspension of disbelief. And you saw it in real life.
I saw it in real life. And yet, Larry, I look at those moments, and I have two young kids. And when I heard this news yesterday, despite all of the greatness on the floor, the image that sticks in my mind is the image of him with his daughter and teaching her the game and the smile and the interaction. And I have a 5-year-old daughter. I have an 8-year-old son. My 8-year-old son saw that and said, what are they talking about? And I told him that he's teaching her the game. And, you know, this perception of his, you know, unyielding will, which of course is true on the floor. But when you juxtapose that with the amazing selflessness and the mentorship and his fatherhood and his passion to have young girls succeed in the sport of basketball. And that's what sticks with me. It's that memory. And I think that he has indeed taught the world lessons that transcend basketball, but it's his compassion and as a father and his will and determination to make sure anyone who has a dream can achieve it through hard work. That's what sticks with me. And it's really an incredible loss. And I pray to God that his family has the strength to bear this with patience and perseverance.
We're talking with Amjad, Air Talk listener joining us from Covina. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, as we remember Kobe Bryant. Amjad, before I let you go, when Kobe went through his difficult periods, difficulty with teammates, with Shaq, the sexual assault allegation against him from Colorado, all that part of his life story. How did you as a fan deal with that?
It's difficult. You look at those moments and you see the human flaws, and as a fan, there's frustrations with that. And certainly I had those frustrations about him as well. And then you judge a person based on their ability to redeem and their ability to learn lessons. There were comments he made. I remember even in the Trayvon Martin episode, there were things that were said and that he regretted, and then he course corrected. And that is the quality that I think of someone who's so excellent, who's achieved so much, their willingness to turn the corner and redeem and build something bigger, and to understand their own flaws. I think that's how I managed to reconcile that. And I think, Larry, it really is after he retired and what he has done out off the court and this second act, so to speak, he had before him, which tragically has been cut short. That second act was really about him being an incredible father and incredible mentor. I mean, he was going to fly to the Mamba Academy with kids there, and he was going to spend his Sunday, coaching kids. I mean, this is what sticks with me, and this is how you judge a man and his body of work.
Amjad, wonderful call to start us off with listener memories of Kobe. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. 866-893-KPECC. Let's listen to Kobe Bryant addressing the Staples Center crowd this following his final game, April 2016.
I grew up a diehard Laker fan. Diehard. I mean, I knew everything about every player that's ever played here. So to be drafted and then traded to this organization and to spend 20 years here, I mean, you can't write something better than this. And I'm more proud of the fact that not about the championships, but about the down years, because we didn't run. We didn't run. We played through all that stuff, and we got our championships, and we did it the right way.
Kobe Bryant, following his final NBA game. We're going to take your calls as we remember Kobe Bryant on Air Talk today. 866-893-5722. 866-893-5722. Back in 90 seconds on Air Talk.
Hey, it's Brian, the host of the How to LA podcast. How about we go to the movies? Join us for a 10-part series, Revival House, and discover the magic of LA's indie theaters. Who knows? You might meet someone.
I know it sounds antithetical because you're just sitting passively, but in fact, you're connecting with everyone else around you.
Subscribe to How to LA from LA Studios wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC as we remember Kobe Bryant. Coming up at 10, it's NPR's live gavel-to-gavel coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump, day two of the opening statements from the president's defense team. Also, just want to let you know, coming up at noon today, we're going to be observing 1 minute and 8 seconds of silence. We're joining with other Los Angeles area radio stations to pay tribute to Kobe Bryant with 1 minute, 8 seconds. He, of course, wore the number 8 when he started his Laker career. We'll be bringing that to you at noon here on KPECC. It was a great line from the Boston Celtics radio play-by-play announcer Sean Grande, who said, as Celtics fans, we didn't think Kobe Bryant could break our hearts one more time. We were wrong. That's Sean Grande, the Celtics radio play-by-play man. Janai in Newport Beach, thank you for joining us. Please share your memories of Kobe.
Yeah, good morning. I'd like to follow up with the other caller. As a father, we were able to, we live in their community as Kobe does, and we were able to attend when my kids were very young, a small intimate ballet class. My daughter was very hesitant to join in the class, and Kobe was so kind and encouraging of her along with me and finally got her to join in. And it was, you know, amazing. And then my kids didn't know who he was because they were very young and they just knew him as another dad of the kids in the class. And as we were leaving the class, we were walking back to our house, and one of the work guys was getting in his van, and he said, "My gosh, you guys see Kobe Bryant? You see Kobe Bryant getting in his car?" And I, as we always try to be discreet with him and his family, yeah, I think we did see him. After he drove away, my daughter turned to me and she said, "Where, Mommy? Where was Kobe Bryant?" I said, "Do you remember that dad you were playing Pac-Man with at the ballet class in the break? That was Kobe Bryant." And that was Kobe Bryant. He was a nice man. He was a dad, and he was a member of our community, and we're all going to miss him, as many millions will.
Janai, wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that about you and your daughter. Thank you so much. Janai in Newport Beach, Gray in South Los Angeles. I understand you worked at Staples Center during the time Shaq and Kobe were playing together?
Yes, I had that absolute privilege of working that season just before the 9/11 attacks. And what was particularly striking to me, it was just such a joy. I almost thought I should have been paying them to work there. But it was such a joy to see him before the games and after the game, so calm, cool, warm, and spiritual. I don't know if the television ever picks that up, but just the warmest, nicest guy in the world. And my best memory that sticks in my mind, sticks in my heart, was when I had brought a quadriplegic young kid of about 13 from Minnesota down to the hallway. And that was to catch a glimpse up close of Kobe going into the locker room. Well, we should never do that. It probably could have cost me my job. But the parents, with tears in their eyes, said, "This is a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Kobe brightens his day more than anything." And the kid had Kobe's jersey on, and we stood there about 2 minutes. Kobe came trotting off the court. And as I stood and gestured and didn't say anything, Mr. Bryant, and gestured to the kid, Kobe still trotted past us, did a U-turn, came back, muffled up the kid's hair. "Hey, I see you wearing the right number there." Took time and posed and took a picture and hugged the kid. And he went from Black Mamba to warm, gentle, spiritual Kobe. And then after the kid took a picture and gurgled and smiled and lit up, he did a U-turn and stiffened his back and turned back into Black Mamba. It was such a sight. I had never seen anything so switching and automatic.
Wow, Gray, what a wonderful story and a great account of the two sides of Kobe Bryant. Gray, thank you so much for sharing that from your time working at Staples Center. Gary in Carlsbad, your memory of Kobe Bryant.
I just have to thank Kobe and the Lakers for being the bond with my son as he was growing up. He was a 6-7-year-old basketball player, and we would scream at the television together, and we still text over the Lakers. And, you know, as soon as I thought of Kobe's losing his daughter, and it just brought tears to my eyes to think that one of the best things I share with my son was the passion we got to see with Kobe and the Lakers. It's an important part of our lives.
Gary, I'm so glad you brought this up because we've heard from so many listeners who had similar kinds of experiences to what you describe as this being a central feature of your relationship with your son. I think that's one of the things that that sports can do, is be that sort of cross-generational bonding. And when you have such a singular personality and performer as a Kobe Bryant to talk about, to look at, and the complexity of him as a person, to have that sort of all as something to consider for two generations of a family, I think it's a very powerful, a powerful thing. And Gary, I thank you so much for sharing that experience. We're remembering Kobe Bryant on Air Talk today, a chance to hear from you, your memories of him, and the influence that Kobe as a Laker might have had in your family, as Gary in Carlsbad just described. 866-893-KPECC. That's 866-893-5722. At last night's Grammy Awards, of course, as a huge crowd was gathering right outside Staples Center at LA Live, the Academy had to address the death of Kobe Bryant, and the host of the Grammys last night, recording artist Alicia Keys, paid her own tribute very early on.
Earlier today, Los Angeles, America, and the whole wide world lost a hero. And we're literally standing here heartbroken in the house that Kobe Bryant built.
That wasn't the only reference to Kobe at the Grammys last night, as a number of performers, some of whom had spent time with Kobe Bryant, paid tribute to him as well. We're at 866-893-KPCC. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to play an excerpt of the great Jerry West talking about the loss of someone he considered like a son. We'll hear comments from Jerry West as made to our media partner, NBC4. But first, Kieran, in Glendora, you're on Air Talk. Your memory of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, years ago, my wife and I were fortunate enough to go to an opening day game. I'm not a real avid basketball fan, but we were fortunate enough to get tickets and went. And, of course, during the course of the game, they put the camera and introduce all the celebrities there. I believe Arnold Schwarzenegger was there and a lot of the other celebrities that go, Nicholson and all that. But in the second half of that game, Kobe took over that game and put on an incredible display. And it was pretty clear to my wife and I that he was the biggest star there. And huge loss for us. But thank you for allowing me to share my memory of him.
Kieran, I appreciate it. I love that, you know, the memories are so different. For some people, it's going to a game and seeing just the presence of Kobe Bryant. Because anybody who went to see him perform and you see one of these elevated Kobe games, it is extraordinary. It's watching someone perform at the highest level in what is one of the most competitive and demanding aspects of competition. And then other people talking about what they experienced from him off the court, what they saw in his familial relationship, or the different community outreach that he had, philanthropic work, all of them, you know, very, very different, but nonetheless powerful experiences. Ted in Glendale, please talk Kobe with us.
Hi. We've moved to the U.S. about in 2009. And living all over the world. After his passing yesterday, it's kind of been the first time that I felt that we have a sense of belonging somewhere, especially just being as a Los Angeles transplant. I just feel proud to be part of LA, feel proud to experience what everybody's been experiencing. He just, I don't know, for once, he kind of just makes us feel we're all together in this, and I've never experienced this before in my life. And it's just amazingly powerful, even though we're not real basketball fans. It's just incredible.
And is it the sense of people coming together, talking about this, the commonality? Is that part of the power of this?
Yeah, it's that. And it's also just a unity, especially just for people who, you know, you come to LA, you're trying to figure out what makes me belong here because there's so many factions. And I feel this was just the one thing we could all relate to. regardless of our background, regardless of where we came from.
Yeah.
It's just nice. It's nice to have that feeling, especially in LA. And Kobe was I would never figure this out until he passed away. And it's been incredible.
Ted, I appreciate your call so much. And one of the things that's impressed me is the range of people talking about Kobe. And I mean, the parts of town, the difference in race, ethnicity, age range of people, you see the commonality here, regardless of which community someone lives in or what their background is, having this in common. Nick in West Hollywood said, I grew up as a fan in Newport Beach. I used to work at a sandwich shop where his kid would come in frequently. I'm heartbroken about the family's loss. That Nick in West Hollywood. And Monica in San Pedro says, my dad, who's since passed, rescued a dog for me. We named it Kobe. We had him for 12 years. My dad died 2 years ago. My dog died just a month later. This makes me very emotional. Monica, thank you. Let's go out listening to the great Jerry West yesterday, Emotions Raw. Talked with our media partner, NBC4.
To think back on the times that I shared with him, watching him growing up, kind of first couple of years kind of being a surrogate father to him here in Los Angeles to help him his ways around Los Angeles, get used to things. You know, he would come to my house and have dinner. My son Ryan used to drive him around when he was sort of didn't know where to go. And then, you know, early part in his career, which was obviously filled with the fact he wasn't playing very much, fans clamoring for him. And the frustration he shared with that and trying to be there and be someone he could lean on and encourage and support what we felt was going to be a player of great substance, which he turned out to be. And then you get to the personal side, and that's where it really gets tough for me. He was like a son for me, to be honest with you.
You can share your memories of Kobe Bryant on our AirTalk page at kpecc.org. Coming up, we're going to get the latest update on the coronavirus that has two confirmed cases here in Southern California, but has led to some pretty drastic policies in China to try and control the virus. We'll be back in just 1 minute on AirTalk.
How to LA is our love letter to Los Angeles. We'll tell you where to get a yummy torta, a bowl of congee, and of course, a burger.
It's a beef sausage blend, fried egg, grilled onions, and then raspberry jam.
What hiking trails to check out.
This feels like we're out in the mountains.
And where to take in some culture.
Limerick Park, they've been fostering jazz for decades.
LA's a big place with a lot going on, so we got you. Subscribe to How to LA from LA Studios wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. Just a reminder, we will take exactly 1 minute and 8 seconds at noon today of silence to remember Kobe Bryant. We're joining with other Los Angeles area radio stations in taking the 68 seconds. Also, we're just minutes away from NPR's live gavel-to-gavel coverage of the Senate impeachment trial, but we did want to update you on this developing story. That is the coronavirus that originated in China has led to bans on movement in some parts of the country. With me, KPCC reporter Robert Garova. He's been covering the coronavirus. And Robert, the latest we heard, two cases here in Southern California. What's the latest?
Yeah, it's two cases in Southern California. The person that is reported in LA County self-reported at LAX. So that's how that case came to the knowledge of the CDC. The person in Orange County is a male in his 50s. It's not clear if he went through LAX enhanced screening from the CDC, but we know that he's in his 50s and he's in a hospital in Orange County and he's in good condition.
What have we heard from public health authorities about any precautions or screening that's being undertaken?
Well, I mean, everybody, you know, every hospital, every healthcare provider in California right now is following directions from the CDC. One of the biggest things is making sure to look specifically at screening questions about travel history. So if somebody, you know, has been to Wuhan in the past couple of weeks and they have symptoms, they're definitely going to be flagged for additional screening.
And what is the incubation period for the virus to show itself with symptoms?
I think the last I'm not super clear on this. I think the last thing I saw was a couple of weeks. There's also some information coming out of China that it could be transmissible during incubation. Just this morning, I was on a call from the CDC. They said they don't have any information of that, but that is information that seems to be coming out of China.
Anything else from that CDC news call that you were able to glean about this?
Yeah, so they said, you know, we had the two additional cases from LA County, and then we had one from Arizona in Maricopa County. That was reported over the weekend. They said overnight the U.S. cases held at 5, so there were no additional confirmed cases. They had some interesting things to say about the tests. They said, you know, ETA is like between 1 and 2 weeks for these tests to be able to send them, because, you know, right now, healthcare providers, if they have a case that they've flagged for screening, they have to send that sample to the CDC, and that can take a few days. The CDC says they're really close at doing additional testing to get that test closer to places where, you know, we've had cases already.
More than a decade ago, we had the SARS virus, of course, and I can't remember how many people were. It was hundreds of people that were killed by that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. I hope I'm not confusing SARS and MERS, but I think SARS was 744 in Asia.
That sounds right. Yeah. My understanding, though this coronavirus is deadly, that it's not as virulent as SARS. Did the CDC get into that this morning?
They didn't specifically. They said that it seems to be most similar to SARS, but the jury is still completely out on how deadly it's going to be.
SARS spread from China again, 2002, 2003. Nearly 800 people were killed in China. And with this new coronavirus outbreak, one of the concerns is it came right with the Chinese New Year travel period, where millions of people are moving.
Yep. I talked with some people over the weekend who are concerned about that. And, you know, it's sort of was a cloud of sadness on people celebrating to a temple, you know, at a temple I went to in Chinatown just over the weekend.
Robert Garova, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll be listening for your ongoing coverage of the coronavirus and its effect on Southern California on KPCC.org and LAist.com. Just 30 seconds away from NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial. I'll be back with you at noon for 1 minute and 8 seconds in which we remember Kobe Bryant. Have a very good day.